All right, Ruthanne, we're going on right now.
Love Talk Radio.
This is Gail Sylvia from SylviaGlobal.com, and I'm so excited to have you here joining us today to listen to this incredible conversation with Ruthanne Harnish. Ruthanne, did I pronounce your last name correctly, Harnish?
You did.
I was hoping to ask you before we got on the air, but those technical challenges didn't give me the opportunity to do so. Thank you so much for being with me today. How are you?
I am terrific. And, you know, today I was discussing that very thing with someone, how you respond when someone asks how you are. And the woman said, I'm surviving. And I inquired, how is that for you, just surviving? And she said, I didn't say just surviving. I said surviving. And it led her to go off on a little monologue, where she concluded by saying, I should have said, surviving and thriving.
Mm.
And so I usually say, couldn't be better. But there's always a way to be better, isn't there?
There is. How long have you used that expression and captured that as the essence of your outlook on life, couldn't be better?
Well, I couldn't tell you. I am not good on passing time quizzes, Gail Sylvia. That's something I'm not good at. I'm good at many things. And I have the occasional weird ability to pinpoint exactly when something happened. But most cases, I have no idea whether it was last week, last minute, last century. And I try and live in the moment.
Mm. Ruthanne, tell us about why you started your foundation and also the passions that you're committed to in life and into helping women and girls.
Well, why I started a foundation in a technical and legal and practical sense is that it gave me a personal tax-advantaged vehicle for putting my values into action. It was a business decision to create a foundation. But that is the government-sanctioned entity that houses the heart of my philanthropy. The people who work with me at the Harnish Foundation have mostly been with me from the beginning, and we've been on a journey to discover what's the best way to invest philanthropic capital to achieve the outcomes that make that investment worthwhile. I've learned so much since I started my career as a journalist, a reporter, transitioning to a philanthropist when, frankly, I married a man who made working unnecessary for me, working for money. He gave me enough of my own money that I was able to create a philanthropic enterprise and make that my work. So that's what I've been doing since 1998, is finding creative ways to use this money to create the future I'm looking for. It involves releasing untapped capacity in others, in individuals, in systems, and trying to bring about a fairer world for everybody. It's very popular now to be opposed to the 1%. Of which I am blessed to be a member, having been at the bottom of the 99 at times in my life. So I'm thrilled to have financial resources, but I have always put my financial resources in service of creating a fairer world for everybody.
Did you start doing this as a young child, and were you influenced in this way in your home and upbringing?
I wish I could say that it is a long family tradition. It is not. I had to teach myself what giving back was about. It was not a custom in my community. It was not part of the culture that I grew up in. I grew up where people had a tough enough time looking after themselves, much less looking after others. Charity meant there was a neighbor coming door to door looking for a dollar for the heart fund. The philanthropy that I do these days, I had no idea such things even existed till probably I was in my 20s or so. Even though I had heard of philanthropists like Andrew Carnegie, who donated so much of his wealth to create public institutions, I had no idea that people I might actually know or meet or become were philanthropists. So this has been a process of education which continues to this good day.
When you made the was the transition for you in terms of your own heart set of giving back and viewing charity and donorship in a broader, beyond the dollar contribution to the heart fund, what sparked that change in you and made you care? Was it the experiences of being a journalist and the amount of suffering that you and your colleagues encountered on a daily basis? Or was there someone personal close to you or some organization that you were involved with and you wanted to be able to do so much more than the community that you grew up in would have taught you to do?
I started my broadcast journalism career when I was merely 23 years old, a college dropout. I grew up with a kind of a tough northern urban attitude and with few role models on how to be a gracious presence in the world. And when I got this amazing TV job, there was no handbook for how to be a public person when you're not fully formed at age 23. I have tremendous sympathy for a lot of people in public life, young people, who have no idea what they're getting into when they say they want to be an actress or a reporter or whatever it is that puts them in front of the general public. You don't know till you get there what it's like to live in the public eye. And I was not a fully formed adult. I had no strong friendships in the community where I lived because I had moved there for personal relationship reasons, not career reasons. I had no circle. I had no mentors. There were no women doing what I was doing in my field that I could call and say, hey, I'm trying to get a break here in a man's world. So literally, I felt my way along doing research along the way. And yes, Gail Sylvia, every day of my career, I saw the terrible things that happen to people, the terrible things people do to each other, the terrible things that happen when nature makes victims. And I saw where if there was enough money, this problem could be fixed. Or if there was enough money, this situation never would have happened in the first place. So while I was a very poorly paid public person, in fact, my first TV job paid so little that I qualified for food stamps, I was nonetheless perceived as someone who must be making a lot of money because I was on television. And so a lot of people made pitches to me about their nonprofits. I couldn't give money. I didn't have any. But I could do a story, or I could MC their event, or I could serve on their board, or I could volunteer at their clinic. And I began to see how philanthropy was far more than merely the ability to write a check, that a person could give of one's time, of one's talent, could use one's connections or one's skills, and make a contribution that in some cases is more valuable than dollars. And then, when I finally became the steward of enough dollars to make a considerable difference, I had more of a business head, I had become an adult, and I knew more what the ability to invest philanthropically meant in the world.
How were you received in, when you would return home into the environment that you grew up in? Did you feel isolated and alone at some times, making, you know, stepping back into the, your former world?
I've never stepped back into a former world. I moved out of my hometown, Buffalo, New York, when I was, I think, 18 years old.
Okay.
And I've owned residence there so that my mom, when she was living, could have a lovely place to live, I have not really, quote-unquote, been back except for the briefest of family visits since 1968.
Wow.
I'm planning a visit in June to celebrate someone's 50th anniversary, and I'm actually planning to take a tour.
A tour of your hometown.
Mm-hmm. A tour of my hometown, because it's changed so much since 1968 that I'd really like to visit what used to be and see what is now.
I've heard you say if people knew better, they would do better. And how do you use your foundation to help increase the empowerment of individuals and organizations through information so that they can know better and be able to do better?
We focus on three areas of grant making: journalism, coaching, and philanthropy itself, with an emphasis on funding programs that benefit women and girls and their advancement and empowerment and equality in the world. So information is key in each of those areas. In journalism, information is the product, and we fund cutting-edge initiatives in modern journalism to help develop forms that will be self-sustaining in the new world. Advertising, which used to support journalism, dried up for technical reasons, economic reasons, societal reasons, shifting patterns of what people do and how they get their information. So we invest in several different ways to help develop high-quality, accurately sourced, reliable, useful information that helps people make better decisions about their lives. That takes the form of, at Kennesaw State University, the Center for Sustainable Journalism, where they create experimental forms of journalism. The one that seems to be working best at this moment is the Juvenile Justice Information Exchange, JJIE.org, and their new publication, Youth Today. These are the preeminent sources of daily news and commentary on what's happening with juvenile justice and youth services in the United States. And I'm sure you could do 12 programs just on what's happening with young people, from trafficking of underage women as prostitutes in the U.S. to the incarceration of juveniles with adults and no separate facilities for people who are under age 18, which happens in more states than you would imagine. Anyway, that's just one tiny aspect of how we invest in information in journalism. In coaching, we were the founding funders of the Institute for Coaching at Harvard Medical School's McLean Hospital, where standards are being developed for health coaching that have the potential to save billions of dollars in healthcare costs. Research is showing that when people have chronic conditions that need medical management, that when they have a health coach, that could be as simple as a volunteer calling them up a couple of times a week to ask how their exercise program is going or if they're having any problems taking their medication, that when a coach is involved, that compliance with doctor's orders increases dramatically and saves on future hospitalizations, future medical costs of all kinds. It's a brilliant way of gathering and transmitting information that helps people live better lives. And in terms of personal coaching and executive coaching, every time people learn how to make better decisions and get along better in this life and maximize their potential as professionals, as creatives, as partners in relationships, the world becomes a better place. And in terms of philanthropy, we invest in disseminating high-quality information on how to become a more informed giver and donor through Thrillionaires.org, a website that shares stories of the thrill of giving, through Women Moving Millions, the international organization that encourages the highest level of giving to charities that benefit women and girls, and many other ways that we invest in getting other people to give what gifts they have, to preserve that which they want to preserve, to change that which they want to change, and to create the world as a better place the way they see it.
When you look back and history records your contributions to making the world a better place, in your wildest dreams, what would you like to see that reveal? What would history say about your heart's desire and what you would like that to look like and that story to say?
You know, Gal Sylvia, my wildest dreams have already been exceeded by more than I could possibly convey to you. I've had the privilege of living a life that has afforded me feedback. I have had the privilege of having a public life in which my contributions were recognized so frequently that I used to have to store my awards and citations in boxes because there wasn't enough room. I've been so blessed to participate in so many projects. This morning, while visiting with some of the women of Women Moving Millions, we were talking about not just the fact that those of us who participate have given at least $1 million to causes that benefit women and girls. In this time when economic inequality is really the focus of attention, and all of us in that room are incredibly sensitive to how unfair it is that some have and some have not, and that certain hard work is not rewarded with money, while other work is rewarded with what seems to be outsized money. Some inherit, some hit the lottery, some bankroll their son who's working on something in the garage and he turns out to be the next internet billionaire. I once counted well over 36 ways that people could find themselves with more money than perhaps they even felt they deserved. And the fact is, in that room, what we really wanted to emphasize is how much experience and how many woman hours of volunteer time, board leadership, and other contributions that aren't money that all of us represented. And somebody piped up and said, and how many nonprofits founded by us? And I started to think from the time I was in my 20s and started getting involved as a volunteer, serving causes that meant something to me, that I could see the effect of volunteers or money. Just my own biography of trying to be a person who gives back and invests in community, I'm amazed. And I looked around the room at the women who were there. We have literally decades of time that we have donated to causes that we think are bigger than ourselves, far more than the ability to write a check. Sometimes our financial advantage has given us the freedom to donate our time and to develop our leadership capabilities so that we can be volunteers of substance and people who bring sound business principles to nonprofit management.
Ruth Ann, we're close to closing this episode, but I certainly hope that you will come back because I didn't get to the rest of my questions in getting to know you, but I do want to give you time to talk about TED. I had the great honor of being able to attend TED Long Beach this year because of you, and I appreciated that exposure so much. Can you talk about your commitment to TED and the services that you provide in order to promote that conference and the impact that it has around the world?
Oh, TED.com, for anyone who has never been, it's that simple, T-E-D, TED.com, is a world of ideas worth spreading. And I invest in ideas worth spreading through TED in being a patron member, but most importantly, through supporting the amazing TED Fellows, world-class achievers from 9 different regions, I believe it is, in the world that come together at the conferences and throughout the year to work on their truly culture-busting projects. I hope that everyone who hears this will go to TED.com and click on the Fellows tab and learn all about them. With my coaching partner, Renee Friedman, we also have a worldwide network of coaches who volunteer to coach the TED Fellows, to give them at least 10 sessions of personal one-on-one coaching in the area of specialty where the fellow identifies a need. If they need to learn how to develop a business plan, we find them a coach for that. If they need to be helping with their speeches, we find a speech coach, etc. And we also produce the Support TED Collaboratorium. We have one coming up in September where we'll have 8 of the TED Fellows meet with about 40 professional coaches who, at their own expense, the coaches will come from around the world, break into teams, and give intense team coaching on specific project needs to the TED Fellows. I hope everyone who's listening will start making TED Talks at TED.com a part of their idea life so that the conversations can become more interesting wherever we all find ourselves.
Ruth Ann Harnish, thank you so much for being my very special guest today on Sylvia Global, and thank you for the insight that you've also shared today about, you know, really following our heart and not being, you know, and being open to growing and creating a life that, how did you express it? living a life that has afforded feedback in so many different levels, and how you share it through your foundation, through your work and your volunteerism, and just how you conduct your life and your life philosophy. I hope that you'll come back soon.
Thank you so much for what you do in the world, Gail Sylvia. It is an honor to know you.
Thank you very much, Ruthann. Have a wonderful day, and we will continue this conversation very soon.